Don't miss out. At Matalan, there's up to 50% off thousands of lines across women's, men's, kids and home in the big sale. And don't forget the £5 and under baby event has landed too. Shop in-store and online at matalan.co.uk. T's and C's apply. Selected lines only.
Welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, is the master of the Robo Scout, still reigning NFBC main event champion, Dylan White. What's going on, man?
How are you? Not too much. It's a nice warm evening here in Toronto. School has started, but it feels like summer still. So just watching my games.
Yeah, I don't blame you, right? It's enjoyable times in the baseball season. So let me ask, just in terms of where you're at with some of your teams, how are you looking? How are you looking in main event? How are you looking with the DC that you've talked about a little bit? How are we looking here in the stretch run over the last couple of weeks?
The DC is second place, fighting for second. Don't think you can win. But if Yamamoto's back on Tuesday next week, which is what Dave Roberts said, then that could help. The other DC, not really in it, maybe can get fifth. The other money leagues, probably not going to money. But my dynasties, I'm probably going to finish second, and then second, at least second in my home league. So the fun keeper ones, as opposed to redraft, I'm doing well, but the redraft ones, I'm not doing well.
Yeah, it's one of those years. My redraft teams have been okay. Dynasty teams, not bad. I had some rough luck with pitching, etc. this year, so that hasn't been great. My labor team's not going to come in last. It's like 8th or 9th, so I'm okay with that. Still battling it out in the whatever non-standard categories. What was the way that they described it in tout? Alternate categories league. I think I'm in second.
Nice.
Wasn't first. Battling it out there. I got a shot going into the end. Just need Bobby Witt Jr. to do his thing. Jose Ramirez to do his thing. Maybe sprinkle in a little, you know, magic dust on the pitching side. See what happens. Then I got a DC where all the hitting kind of came together the last like month and a half, like the second half of the season. Just guys coming back from injuries, coupled with a lot of call-ups and bounce backs. And so that team is like really made up a ton of points in hitting. It was a really good pitching team to begin with. So that one's in second place in that DC. So nice. I, you know, $150 buy-in. It was $150 from a DC I'd won a couple years ago because I didn't do one in 2023. So it was free money. And, you know, we might make a little bit extra, you know, use that next year to go into a bigger league, see what we can do. That's the one that I manage with our good friend Dan Fu, who was on the podcast a couple weeks ago. Dylan, it's enough about that. Any September call-ups that you're excited about? It's been sort of an underwhelming September for call-ups. Kind of boring call-ups. I don't know if I'm wrong on that.
It has been boring. I think it's like they've been being brought up during the season. So like the September 1st or whatever magic day wasn't magic at all. I mean, I'm hoping for that DC that's fighting for it. We have Jason Dominguez. I think we have Colson Montgomery. We have Drew Gilbert, like all these guys maybe who we thought could contribute for us have not contributed and we're in September. We need an outfielder. So, you know, Jason or Gilbert would be nice. Those are the main ones just from a personal and selfish point of view that I'm looking forward to. Maybe Kumar Rocker just for the storyline. I'd love to see that if that would happen.
I would be surprised. Yeah. You know, I think there is some merit to the idea that if you have some tough 40-man decisions and you're not going to make the playoffs, there's no reason to add players onto your 40 man that you don't have to add in the offseason. And I believe Rocker still has another year until he has to be added to the 40 man roster, just because he was a 2022 college pick, not 21, though he did go in both drafts. So, yeah, I mean, I think like it's like the Red Sox with a like Christian Campbell. If they're in the mix, let's say they're in first or second place, there's a realistic shot they could make the playoffs or win the division. I think Christian Campbell's their second baseman right now, or at least is up. He might be their shortstop. He's going to be up in the infield. They've had him playing quite a bit of short. I saw a couple times last week. Made some travels over the last week or so. I saw and spoke with Roman Anthony and Christian Campbell. Saw a little Kyle Teal as well. Trying to think, like, on the pitching side, I saw Dolander a couple weeks ago. I saw Sean Sullivan a couple weeks ago.
Nice.
I saw Dyan Santos, slider monster from the Blue Jays this evening. Saw Mikey Romero hit a homer, not off Santos, in a doubleheader first game. He wasn't in the second game, so I boogied home afterward. And I got my first look at Josh Tinson Garcia.
So, is that how it's pronounced? I have no idea.
Yeah, it's Josh Tinson.
Okay, that's easy enough.
Garcia. Looked it up on the naming guide, so maybe there's a slight syllable that might be seeing the wrong emphasis, but I'm not quite sure there. All right, but today we're going to be talking FYPD. I don't think we got to go into news and notes. At this point, if you're still in the mix, you know what's going on. You don't need us to dial you in. So we're looking toward the offseason. We're building toward the offseason. We're going to have lots of great offseason fantasy baseball content, just like we did last year. Dynasty rankings, positional rankings, etc. Get those out nice and early for you so you can use them as your secret weapon in all your drafts. But Dylan, we went through our first pass of the first year player draft list. Those that are hearing this might have already read the list. They might be able to read the list in a few hours. I'm not sure that it's going to drop exactly at 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning, because there's some, you know, some fancy dancy work behind the scenes to make it look a certain way. We'll see what Mark does with that. But we're recording the night before this releases. So this is our first pass with this FYPD class. We're going up to 50. We'll build the list out further as we go along into the offseason. We'll have an update maybe with the FYPD list. But I figured we're not going to catch every league, because there are some that do draft right after the draft, which is a little crazy, but there are some that do that. But a majority of them don't start until October and after. Most of them are taking place in December, at least in terms of my leagues, December, January, February, maybe some that creep into March. Dylan, so we got some time still with this class before we're really going to have a whole lot more information. Anybody that's an A-ball, they're pretty much done for the year after this week. Couple more weeks in Double A, and I don't think any of these guys are seeing Triple A this year. We're not going to have any Wyatt Langfords. But so at most, you know, 40, 50 at bats, like maximum for some of these guys, probably more like 20, 25. So I felt like we had a good enough sample size on the pro side. Not everybody's debuted, to put together the list. You know, we spoke with some folks internally. Of course, we listened to Carlos. We listened to Ben, you know, talked to some other sources, folks that I know that are, will remain unnamed, but are knowledgeable and have some grasp on the fantasy landscape as well. You know, that do some things more on the team side, and just kind of leaned on them to get different input in terms of what, you know, this particular person likes versus this person. I've obviously seen a lot of the college players, seen some of the high school players as well, Dylan. But what are sort of your overarching takeaways as you're starting to dive into this class a little bit, obviously with less experience, less numbers to play with. But are there some sort of standouts or some themes that you're seeing in this year's FYPD drafts?
I would say, with the exception of some kind of the obvious guys like Cam Smith or Christian Moore, Nick Kurtz. The college hitters have not kind of come out of the gates, maybe as much as I'd hoped. I mean, we were kind of spoiled last year with Langford, kind of crushing it right from the get-go. And some of the other guys, like Colt Emerson, like just really popping already immediately with their small sample sizes. Not really seeing that except for those guys I mentioned. Cam Smith being number one, I would say.
Christian and he Morgan. Was in low A for a good chunk of that. So he had like the easiest landing spot, we'll say. The true. Softest landing, so to speak. You know?
That's true. That's true. I mean, he does have over 30 at-bats or plate appearances in high A. I think he had a home run today or maybe yesterday. But yeah, no, I completely agree. It's been softer. But still, like, you know, Charlie Condon, the much documented maybe struggles or slow start, maybe let's put it that way, has been disappointing. I had him in my home league. I dropped him just because it's a shallow league. So,
oh, okay.
This is not newsworthy, really. It's like Zahn is still available.
That's impressive, Dylan.
Christian Campbell still available. Like all these guys are available. Very, very shallow league. So I'm positioning for the playoffs, and I need to use all my spots, my roster slots. I can't have it on these guys who have a 60% contact rate. Can't deal with that. Yeah, I think it's more of I'm just kind of underwhelmed maybe right now with the college hitters. No one's popping. Like I said, like last year we had immediate pops, but from some guys that in their professional debuts and haven't really seen that yet. Of course, you know, in the offseason as we dig in further, looking at the StatCast data and all that in a bit more detail, you know, that may change. That opinion may change. But that's kind of my perception right now. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it hasn't been, you know, the fireworks that we probably anticipated. You know, some of that I think is a few different things. Like if Christian Moore is in high A, the numbers might be crazy, right? He was pushed up to double A pretty quickly, was good right off the bat, has seen a little bit more struggles. There's a bit of end zone whiff. We're also like overanalyzing small sample sizes. Bazzana had a couple of rough series, but other than that, has been really good. You know, I think it's an 820, you know, ops, OPS, whatever you want to call it, which isn't too bad. Three home runs, you know, played right out of the draft. I think that's not all that disappointing. Weatherholt started super hot, like came out the chute and was hitting everything and has slowed down a lot. It's a 671 ops right now. Yeah, you know, I think Nick Kurtz was somebody who looked amazing and then got hurt, which is kind of like the story of Nick Kurtz for those of you now tuning into the Nick Kurtz story a couple of years after, you know, we've been tuned in on the college side. That's always his issue. You know, I never saw him on the Cape. I never really saw him in summer ball because he was always off during the summer because he was hurt. You know, Jack Caglione has not really been all that productive either. We're not seeing Braden Montgomery because Braden Montgomery is still recovering from an ankle injury, pretty serious one. Haven't seen Chase Burns. Hagen Smith has looked dynamic in spurts, but it's still limited. You know, and then we can kind of go further down this list. I feel like with a lot of these guys, we honestly haven't gotten a good sample. And you know, I think the shortening of the, or not the shortening, but the way they moved the FCL and the ACL schedules, that kind of like lacked some of those cushy debuts that they would give some of these players. The further restrictions and clamps they've put on domestic roster restrictions, and the fact that some of these guys in the Bridge League don't necessarily have to be on that, I guess, to participate. So, you know, there's a few different factors here that I think maybe we're seeing some of these guys, you know, not pushed as aggressively as we have in previous years, like out of the draft. Some of that is a lot of high school guys. Some of it's a lot of pitching kind of later in the first and early second round that just by nature, a lot of those guys get some workload management after their college seasons. But it is interesting because, you know, we would have expected at least like one guy to set high A on fire. And as you said, we really haven't seen that. And that's funny because the perception of this class, and this can always change, but the perception of this class entering this conversation, entering the draft, coming out of the draft was, wow, there's a lot of really talented college hitters that can move really fast. And, you know, something that on my other podcast with Matt Pajak, we did a whole episode on how a lot of these top 10 college hitters really haven't moved that fast or had as much upside as we thought. You know, the list is kind of ugly. Like, I think outside of like Adley Rutschman and Alec Baum, and depending how you feel on Nico Horner, and depending on how you feel on like Bryson Stott, which is pretty good, and Jonathan India, there's a lot of duds too. Like I named the good names, and then like everything else is kind of rough. And, you know, we've even seen a guy like Spencer Torkelson, who was very highly touted, is highly touted, would have gone top five college bats in this class, easy. Another guy that just like hasn't adjusted to pro ball as well as maybe we had anticipated he was going to. So, and spent a lot of season in AAA and wasn't that great in AAA, frankly, right? So Dylan, I don't think you're wrong here. Now that said, we sat down, we had some conversations. We decided that though the site has Carlos and the site have Charlie Condon one. They had Charlie Condon one in the draft. I think on the prospects list, if I have to double check, I think he's still the top ranked draftee. We acknowledge the struggles with Charlie Condon. And I think that in the fantasy realm, and you could certainly jump in here and correct me if I'm wrong, the, you know, helium and vibes maybe matter a little bit more than they would on a scouting list. You know, that you're going to be a little more reactionary because the marketplace and the, in, you know, the context of the list that we're making here are going to be more reactionary. And I think that there's cause for concern here with Charlie Condon. I think he's going to come out next year. I think he's going to hit. He's just not going to be in Hartford to start the year unless he has a really good camp. Tired, you know, played a lot of baseball, a lot of expectations, you know, he's up there in Spokane, Washington, and whatever, you know, he's struggling a little bit. I think that happens from time to time. The struggles and the swing and miss have not been good. So we acknowledge that he is not our number one overall prospect. We leaned instead toward Travis Bezzana. I don't think it's wrong to say I have some personal bias toward Bezzana. I'm a big fan. I think he's a great player, but I think like, logically, the case that I made to you when we started making this list was Bezzana for me has the hit tool in line with Weatherholt and Kurtz and, you know, some of these other guys in this class up the top that can hit. He has power, though it's not the power of Condon or Kurtz or, you know, Brady Montgomery or Jack Caglianone. It is above average power. The EVs in college are really good. I think the stuff in pro ball is still catching up a little bit. I'm sure that's something that Bezzana will figure out. But he also has the most upside from like an athleticism standpoint. This guy's the best athletic tester of this group. The best athlete of this group. Their speed. I think he could run more in pro ball than he did in college, where he had a different lineup spot and sort of expectation as a run producer and a guy that was going to drive in runs as well. I think this guy, you know, at peak can be a dynamic leadoff type, you know. I think there's 20 home run upside here. I think there's 20 steal upside with really high OBPs and good batting averages. As much as he's struggled for periods, like this is somebody just having talked to him a bunch and talked to him specifically about some of the work that he puts in, Dylan. Yeah, I mean, for me, it's like it's an easy like, yeah, I think this guy's the best bet. I think he has the highest floor. I also think that the ceiling is pretty close to like what the ceiling could be for a Charlie Condon, just because of, or Kurtz or whoever, just because of the speed aspect, you know, that I do think he's gonna run more than some of these other guys will, and has been durable too. Like Weatherholt's had some durability issues. You know, there's been some durability issues with Nick Kurtz. Certainly Brady Montgomery now has an injury. I don't know if it's a durability issue long-term, but you know, he's in the lineup every day. Like the availability part of it is super valuable. And, you know, I think it's just the smartest decision you can make right now. That doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be right a year from now, but sort of what are your thoughts in the conversation at the top? Cause I do think there's a few different, you know, potential options there.
I think coming in to their debuts, I think it was a toss up. It was, do you want the high floor and, you know, very good ceiling, or do you want the very high ceiling? That's Bazzana. Or do you want the very high ceiling, but possibly low floor of Condon? And then the tiebreaker for me was Coors. And then now with this performance, like with Bazzana, maybe he's, you know, it's not blowing off the page, but like the underlying data is pretty good. Like he has a 26% strikeout rate, which doesn't sound great, but his contact rate is 79%. His chase rate is below 20%. His barrel rate's 20%. Like he's kind of lighting it up Statcast wise. He just may not be manifesting it in results. Meanwhile, Condon is really struggling under the hood. Like his barrel rate 7%, his ex-Wobacon is below 300. His contact rate, which I alluded to earlier, is like 63%. Like he is struggling. He is crushing it when he makes contact, but like he even has like kind of a high ground ball rate as well. So like for me, that kind of shifted the scales. I know it shouldn't, because it's only been, you know, 80 plate appearances or whatever it is, but it's just showing like he's having struggles immediately, and under the hood, it's pretty ugly too. So I know, you know, Carlos had a really good article about, you know, some of the struggles and things that he's got to work on, Condon. But Bazzana just seems so safe right now. And like you said, power, speed, on base, there's thump in the bat too. Like I said, the Statcast is very good underneath the hood as well. It just seemed like just the smart play.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's one of the things when I talked to him about it too, was just he's very cognizant of not being 6'4", 6'5", huge masher, you know, just natural strength type. So he tries to optimize where he hits the ball to in terms of getting to his pull side power, attacking stuff in the inner half, and he knows that he can do damage on and, you know, hit in the air to his pull side. And, you know, he's got a 58%, which is very high, line drive plus fly ball rate, 36.4% air pull. So, you know, of the times that, you know, the balls are in the air, that 58%, you know, nearly 40% of the time he's pulling it, which is pretty good. You know, pretty good hard hit rate. It's 40% right now. He does have a ball at 109 as well. So, you know, he's interesting to me. And I think, as you said, like the Charlie Condon concern is there is some stuff that's under the hood that's really ugly, like the overall miss rate, the chase isn't good. You know, he's hit the ball hard, but he hasn't hit the ball in the air that much. I'm less concerned with him with pulling the ball, but he's got a lower hard hit rate than Bazzana does right now. And I think that's a little concerning. So we actually dropped Condon down to 3, and we have Weatherholt at 2. I think my case for Weatherholt, this is a guy that led the nation in hitting and batting average as a sophomore, dealt with some injuries in the summer and then kind of rolled into his season. The skills are there. 14% chase rate, 9.2% zone miss, 20% miss overall, has, you know, 90th percentile of 104.1, which is pretty good. Doesn't hit the ball in the air as much as Bazzana, doesn't pull the ball quite as much as Bazzana does. But it's really, really good swing decisions, like top of the scale type of swing decisions with this guy. There's bat to ball skills. It's just some of the angles, et cetera, haven't been great. And you know, there's been more ground ball contact, less fly ball contact than you probably want. I think that's all stuff that will work itself out. I also think there's probably some impact on the underlying data, just playing in the Florida State League, et cetera. Cause his ex-Wobacon is pretty low considering what the power numbers are. And you know, he's got a 53% hard hit rate, for example. So he's hitting a lot of stuff hard into the ground. I think some of that can be worked out. But you know, the hit tool is there. I just think there's less concerns. There's a chance he plays shortstop. there's a chance this guy, I think, like pie in the sky, develops into a 60 hit, 60 power. But it is going to be a matter of, can you get to the right angles consistently? So that's a question. We got Christian Moore at 4. We did it for the rhyme, obviously, Dylan. I think this is an interesting conversation because Moore came out the gates, looked really good. I think we know he's probably going to be in the big leagues fairly quickly. But I don't think he's overtaken Condon quite yet, just because despite the production, there are some similar concerns with Christian Moore and swing and miss. Am I wrong, Dylan?
You are not wrong. He's hitting them at the right angles. His barrel rates, 25.
Oh, yeah.
His ex-Wobicon's like nearly 500. It's ridiculous. So he has, a 107 90th percentile, which is, same as Condon, but and a 65% contact rate, but it's against tougher pitching at a higher level. And he's hitting it at the right angle, at the correct angles when he hits them. So it's kind of even a safer profile, as weird as that sounds, right now from what he's showing. I know it's, again, 100 plate appearances, but even with regression, it's still significantly better than Condon right now. So I know he slowed down. I know he has some sort of injury right now that I don't know, the Angels are being kind of cagey with it, or maybe they don't even know. He may not come up in the near term, maybe at the end of this
year. Yeah, I don't think he's going to be up this year, actually. I think he slowed down a little bit and they kind of didn't see the need. But, if he has a good camp, we're talking next year. It wouldn't shock me if he's breaking camp or is up pretty early. He's going to be on top 100 lists, I think, probably pretty consistently across the board. And that quality of contact is definitely eye-catching. Like, that's the thing. He may have the best quality of contact of any of these players we've discussed or will discuss.
Yeah. I mean, him or Nick Kurtz. But, I think the quality of contact, the fact, the proximity, like, he will be contributing for fantasy teams like next year, and seeing Zach Neto and Nolan Shanwell, they're doing reasonably well. I mean, Neto is doing very well, but Shanwell has even put up positive fantasy value now, that it's helpful for those who are competing and want to get some value in the near term. Like, he'll be up far before Condon, maybe a year before Condon, that is valuable in fantasy.
Yeah, 100%. We actually, you mentioned Nick Kurtz. We have Nick Kurtz right at number 5. We'll talk about Mr. Kurtz right after this. We're going to take a quick break.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. We mean it. We have a college baseball writer opening at Baseball America right now. And where are we posting it? Indeed, because Indeed makes hiring easy and it gives us great candidates. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses, including Baseball America, worldwide, that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to improve any dog's health: their food. What she's discovered is that the way that many dog foods are made can actually create toxins that can be wrecking your dog's health. And this is true from even many premium brands. Fortunately, she's found that just by adding a few special superfoods to her dog's food, she saw huge transformations in their health. She's made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone could do the same thing to see incredible changes to their dog's health. I've got two dogs, and I want them to be with me for a very long time. There's a lot of good stuff here that made me think about how most dog foods are made, what to avoid for my dogs, and superfoods that are great for them. If you want to keep your dog healthy and happy, go to badlandsfood.com/baseball and watch Catherine's video right now. Again, that's BADLANDSFOOD.com/baseball.
Don't miss out. At Matalan, there's up to 50% off thousands of lines across women's, men's, kids and home in the big sale. And don't forget the £5 and under baby event has landed too. Shop in-store and online at matalan.co.uk. T's and C's apply. Selected lines only.
All right. And we are back, Dylan. We're talking first-year player draft rankings for fantasy. Those of you that aren't familiar, if you're in a dynasty league, often when the new players from the draft, from the international market, become available in your league, it's the following offseason, and there might be a draft of some sort. And it's important to know these players and rank them out and be able to get the best possible value. Once January 15th comes, we will have updated rankings with those players and their signing teams, maybe even have them a little bit earlier. Of course, we have the illustrious Ben Badler to lean on with those rankings and inserting those players. And he did a good job last year with being aggressive on some of the guys that have broken out, etc. Probably could have been higher on Jesus Mate, but I think everybody could have been higher on Jesus Mate. This is going to be the off season of Jeff talking about Jesus Mate. But Nick Kurtz, unfortunately with Kurtz, is he off the IL or is he currently on the IL? He's currently on the IL.
I think he's currently on the IL, yeah.
Yes, he is. He's currently on the IL, so he's going to be out, I would imagine, for the remainder of the season. I don't think they're going to rush him back for any reason. The small sample that we did get across, low A and then double A, was actually pretty good. Numbers were great. I think we saw one of the reasons that I was into Kurtz, and we had this conversation a couple of weeks back, kind of in the post-mortem of the draft. I just love Kurtz's combination of plate skills and power. And his quality of contact is slightly better than Christian Moore's. The sample size and in terms of balls in play is a little bit smaller. But there's no swing and miss here. Chase numbers have always been good with Kurtz. It's a really good balanced approach. And the power is crazy. I mean, it's a 109.4, though it's not stabilized yet. It's only 24 balls in play. So it's about, you know, three times that sample size before it actually evens out. But that just kind of shows the type of power this guy has. He's already hit a ball 113.4 in his professional career.
Yeah, his max EV is higher than everyone who was drafted except for Jack Caglione, who has a 114 on the dot. But Christian Moore is a bit short. He's at 112.6. So, I mean, Nick Kurtz is doing everything that you said he would do right after the draft before the debut. And it's impressive. I mean, it's what the StatCast predicted, too. It was something I was going to mention with the Weatherholt and the Bizzana, last year, before the year this college season started, their StatCast numbers from the year before were actually quite good. They were near the top. So it's great that they continued. You know, they had the preseason buzz and they kept it through. So it's kind of like they are more pedigreed and they have more of a track record. So I just wanted to mention that their StatCast has been consistent for 2 years, and it's manifesting here in the professional leagues too. So Nick Kurtz, yeah, best quality of contact. Like you said, he's athletic. Although it's first base, the bat definitely seems to play. Oakland has been doing a lot of good things with their hitters recently. I don't know if it's a philosophical change or what, but Lawrence Butler and JJ Blade even has been doing really well. Yeah. And Brett Rooker has been crushing it. I know he's not a prospect, but there may be some of the development machine working on there. And so it's a lot more, and they're going to be playing not in Oakland anymore. So a nice hitter.
Not in Oakland anymore, eh?
Exactly. So Nick Kurtz, definitely going to be, I believe, a top 5 pick in FYPD. Yeah. Depending on what international signees there are.
Yeah. I mean, if we get Roki Sasaki, if that happens, it's going to push the whole board down. I think he's the easy one. If that happens, do you agree?
Yeah, for sure.
And I think he's the only international guy that would go one. And I don't know the 2025 January 15 class well myself. So, and I feel like even if you do, like, that can change so quickly once they actually get into some professional games, etc. Talking the back end of the top 10 here, then we'll wrap up. We said this list is going to go to 50. This is just our first iteration. We got a lot more players, got more sleepers, guys I still like that we haven't ranked yet. Let's talk the pitchers here, though. 6-7, Chase Burns, Hagen Smith. We had some conversations about this. Carlos has Burns over Smith. Some of our other colleagues have Smith over Burns. I have flip-flopped on this back and forth a few times. I'll share my piece on this. If you like Burns, you know, I think both have really good fastballs. Smith's fastball might be a little bit better. If you like Burns, it's because there's a deeper pitch arsenal. There's four pitches there. You got the power. You think that he can potentially start, right? Smith has the more unique 1-2 punch. Like, I think Burns' slider is a little bit better, but Smith's slider is still very, very good. And the other side of that conversation, the fastball is really, really unique. It's a hard fastball in the mid-90s from the left side, so you got to give him a couple of ticks and it kind of evens it out in terms of velocity with Burns. It's from a super low release height, flatter vertical approach angle. It's about 4.2, 4.3. So not a crazy outlier, but flat enough at that velocity from the left side to really do some damage with a good slider. You know, if he can develop a splitter or, you know, a cutter, just something that he can throw as a secondary to right-handers outside of the slider and the fastball. He does have a changeup. He just hasn't really thrown it. I think that's going to be really interesting to see how that develops. Like, the ceiling here could be higher, but it's so tough with Burns because this could just be, you know, another sort of almost Hunter Green style pitcher for the Reds. And he has dominant stuff. You know, he really does have dominant stuff. So I think it's a 1A, 1B kind of, you know, pick your poison here. And like I said, I've gone back and forth because I think there's a logical case to be made for either. My eyeballs, having watched him, I like Smith a little bit more. I worry about Burns' home run problem a little bit, but I also wonder if that's going to be some sequencing stuff. If he starts to throw the curveball more, starts to throw the changeup more, you know, there just might be a little more upside for his repertoire to be more varied and vast. And I think that ultimately could lead to maybe less relief for his questions. There's some injury history with Smith too, though he has handled innings. And he did it, you know, his entire career in the SEC, which Burns was up and down the SEC and was really good in the ACC this year with Wake Forest. The Wake Forest is a bandbox and a really tough place to pitch, especially if you're home run prone. So that could have been some of the home run numbers that we saw as well. Do you have any thoughts on Burns versus Smith? I think it's a toss up. It's, you talk to me one day, I could tell you one thing, and then the next day I'd be like, yeah, I'm leaning Smith today. You know,
I mean, it's exactly what you said. I mean, that was our conversation that we had the other day. I lean Burns, and then I'm like, well, you know, it's playing in Cincinnati. So then I lean Smith, and then like, I don't know. It's sort of like maybe two elite pitches. I like the deeper arsenal maybe of Burns, and then, yeah, and he can pitch in Cincy because like Hunter Green had a bit of a home run problem and he's okay. So I think just leaning on the quote unquote stuff plus, I think to break the tie, I'm going with Burns, but you know, that changes on an hourly basis.
Yeah, exactly. I think everyone we talked to had him sort of neck and neck. So, no questions there. It was, you know, pretty easy, pretty clear. And then finishing up the show here in the back end of the top 10, Brandon Montgomery, Cam Smith, Jack Caglione. This one is like, you could pick this however you want to. I'm a little lower on Jack. Carlos has been a little bit lower on Jack, and you're a little lower on Jack. The swing decisions do frighten me a little bit, though. I do think it's something that could be fixed. Still a valuable FYPD player, still a top 100 prospect, still somebody with an outlier tool in terms of the contact power combination. But how much did the swing decisions like push Jack down for you? Because I know when we had this conversation, I didn't get a lot of pushback around, hey, Brandon Montgomery going to the Red Sox. They've had so much success recently with their hitting development and the bat speed training. This guy could have even more power than he already has. Cam Smith, as we said, has been one of the best performers post-draft of any draft. He's another guy, pretty good athlete. Not a great defender, could end up at first base, but he is a pretty good athlete with power. Kind of exciting. Like, it's close with all three of these, but is it the swing decisions with Jack?
It's 100% the swing decisions. I when I look at the Statcast, I like to see a lot of red. And when you see something blue sticking out, it scares me. So, you know, like Davison De Los Santos, maybe can make it, maybe can make it work. Christian Encarnacion, maybe can make it work. John Kinsey Noel, maybe can make it work. But I just feel there's volatility in that profile. It's not a sure thing. I think there's going to be ups and downs in a major league career. And I'm already kind of precluding that Davison De Los Santos and John Kinsey Noel are going to have a major league career, a sustained major league career. It scares me. It's a flaw in the profile. Major league pitching is very good. He's not even been at the upper levels yet. No question about the power, no question about the contact. I'm just worried that, maybe they'll get him to chase and he makes contact on those O balls instead of the Z balls. And that's not as good power, not as good contact, not as good quality of contact. So it's an easy kind of lowering for me, a tie.
And it caps the upside. Like you talked about it, but I really think that's the limiting factor with all those hitters you named, is it caps their upside a little bit. And it also makes them somewhat more format dependent. Mm-hmm. Where in OBP and points formats, we're seeing more and more of those out there. Those guys can be a little bit less valuable, just simply because they don't walk, and it's, those less chances on base, less chances for runs, less chances for stolen bases. If there's somebody that runs, could be more chances for RBIs with an aggressive approach like that. Those guys aren't without a place, and they can figure it out and have value. I think, if you're looking long term on what you want this guy to be, you sort of hope that he develops into a left-handed hitting Anthony Santander that pretty much plays exclusively first base, but I don't think it's all the way gone that he could play a corner outfield spot. Like, maybe not, but he's got a big arm. It wouldn't shock me if that ends up coming to fruition at some point and he puts in some work and does it. But still an interesting player. It's a really good top 10. We still got a bunch of high school guys from outside of this area. We got some sleepers that we could mention. But you know what, Dylan? We've gone 40 minutes on this. We're going to leave the list for people to check out. We'll have some follow-up stuff coming down the pipe as well. So, Dylan, to wrap this show up, say goodnight to the people. Say goodbye. Thank you for their time. Thanks for tuning in. Baseball America Podcast. This is Jeff. That's Dylan.